I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Concern in Canada.
Most people are dying by euthanasia, not because they're in extreme pain. That's almost not even on the radar, even though that does exist. Usually it's because they feel their life lacks meaning, purpose, or value.
A pro-life advocate gives us a grim prediction regarding the scope of the country's assisted suicide program. Identity crisis. On-campus reaction at the University of Notre Dame after a pro-abortion professor withdraws from her appointment to lead the school's Asian Studies program. And a man-to-man scheme. EWTN's Alan Holdren is in the American Midwest for a conference aimed at strengthening men and the family.
A pro-life advocate calling for an end to legalize assisted suicide in Canada makes a startling prediction. He says the country's medical aid in dying program is set to surpass 100,000 deaths. Alex Schadenberg from the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition also says he has the numbers to prove it. Schadenberg made the sad discovery after reviewing Canadian government numbers from the fourth quarter of last year, combined with previously released official totals. Those findings reveal that in Ontario alone last year, there were more than 5,000 euthanasia deaths. That is up from around 4,900 in 2024, a 7.2 increase. And in around 4,600 in 2023, a 6.5% increase that year. Schadenberg says the numbers are proof assisted suicide is increasing, not stabilizing, nor decreasing. The Catholic Church strongly opposes assisted suicide. And Alex Schadenberg joins us now. He is the executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition and is based in Canada. Alex, thank you for being with us. There's a lot to unpack, but let's start with the grim milestone that could happen next month. Can you tell us how you arrived at your prediction of 100,000 assisted suicide deaths by mid to late April?
Well, what's happening in Canada is that the data is always delayed, but I'm able to contact the different provinces and get a lot of the data. And basically, I'm predicting it based on the growth that's been going on in each province of killing. So the euthanasia is literally homicide. It is killing. We legalize euthanasia in Canada by creating an exception in our criminal code to homicide. So basically, I'm predicting that there's going to be somewhere around 17,000. There was around 17,600 or in that range euthanasia killings in 2025. And based on the number of months, it'll be around mid-April when we surpass that 100,000 killings mark, which is a very sad thing to mourn.
It is. And can you tell us why did you choose to use Ontario as a barometer of the MAID program?
Well, Ontario is the largest province in Canada. So 39% of Canadians live in Ontario. And if you look at the Ontario data, it tends to be very indicative of what happened nationally. So obviously each region of the country is a little different. But if Ontario grew by about 7%, it's very likely that Canada is around the same, which is very similar to previous years. You see, Ontario is very indicative of the growth that's been going on, very similar to other places, etc.
And can you give us a quick refresher on how and why medical aid in dying, or MAID, became legal in Canada in 2016?
So Canada legalized euthanasia after a Supreme Court decision, which was the Carter decision. That case came out of British Columbia. Essentially, what the Carter decision did is it said that the law, which said that euthanasia, assisted suicide, were illegal, that was an overbreadth, that the law could be safely put in place, which allowed for some euthanasia. But instead, we have what we have, which is an insane situation, which is basically a law that lacks definition, which is allowed. And since 2021, we expanded the law that you don't have to be terminally ill in Canada to be killed by euthanasia. So very sad. We had this story on December 30th of Keanu, a 26-year-old young man with a lot of mental health issues, but he was a diabetic who died by euthanasia in Vancouver by Dr. Ellen Weeb. Here's a guy who's not terminally ill, who's not dying, who, you know, whose family was shocked when he died, and yet this was considered okay within our legal system.
That's horrifying to hear. Is there anything that can be done to stop or slow Canada's assisted suicide program?
Right now, there's a bill in Parliament to reverse the euthanasia for mental illness part of the law. So that's Bill C-218. It will go to a vote in Parliament on April the 15th. But it's a private member's bill. So the problem with a private member's bill is it's not, you know, sponsored by a government member, and therefore it has an uphill battle. But we're really hoping that enough of the Liberals will decide to support it and reverse the mental illness part of the law. But that's only a minor part of the law. The thing is, this is a long-term situation that we have to be involved in. And the most important thing we can do is recognize the importance of caring for people, being with people, recognize that family members, friends, etc., that when they're going through illness, that they're not feeling alone, they're not feeling lonely, they're not feeling that their life lacks meaning, purpose, or value, and that someone actually cares about them. Because most people are dying by euthanasia, not because they're in extreme pain. That's almost not even on the radar, even though that does exist. Usually it's because they feel their life lacks meaning, purpose, or value, and they're having their lives ended. They're being killed.
Now, I think that's such a good reminder of what's at the root of this, the human dignity. Switching gears a little bit now, we know you followed a story about the European nation of Slovenia and how it overturned an assisted suicide law. Can you tell us about this and the role that faith groups played in its reversal?
Slovenia gives us great hope because, as sad as it was that they legalized assisted suicide in July of last year, they put together a referendum, and on November 23rd of last year, Slovenians voted by 53.6% to overturn their assisted suicide law. So they've reversed that. They're the first country in the world to have actually done that. But on top of it, they did it by being organized and focused and working together. They also really focused on prayer. I think that's very important. Prayer is a way that not only moves us closer to God, but it motivates us. It helps us be clear about what we're about. Remember, euthanasia and assisted suicide is about killing, but it's sold to us as preventing suffering. And, you know, human beings, they don't want to suffer. So in order to motivate people to say, well, this is important, I think the fact that the churches came together of all faiths, of all groups, Christians, non-Christians, they came together and they opposed this strongly, as well as, of course, others, that made the basic difference in the whole issue.
Now, we only have a few minutes left, but we know you've also been following the push to legalize assisted suicide in the United Kingdom, and especially the Welsh National Health Services. What is the latest there?
Okay, so there's a bill right now in the British Parliament, and it's for England and Wales. And that bill passed in the House of Commons last year, and now it's being debated in the House of Lords. Now, what's happening is, I know the House of Lords is a mixture most Americans probably wouldn't care to understand, to tell you the truth. As Canadians, it's very different, too. But it's a mixture of people who are appointed and those who have hereditary rights to a seat. But anyway, it appears that the House of Lords will be likely defeating that bill. Like, the bill seems to be stopped now in the House of Lords. So that's good news that there's been a sober second thought. But right now there's also a bill in Scotland. So Scotland has its own right to decide on this issue. And they have a bill that's going to be voted on March 17th. So that's coming up very soon. But we're really, really hoping that the Scottish bill gets defeated because, obviously, killing is not good whether it's done anywhere. The fact of it is it's a very close vote in Scotland. So if you're a person who knows Scottish people or you're a person of prayer, be active in this. Recognize the importance worldwide of preventing killing.
Amen. Well, Alex, thank you so much for your work. And please do count on our prayers.
Thank you very much.
A recent article says there is a growing network of abortion activists who are mailing abortion pills across the United States. This is often being done free of charge and outside traditional medical systems. A pro-life advocate warns this raises serious moral, medical, and legal concerns. A recent report says that since 2022, abortion advocates sent more than 100,000 abortion pill regimens through the mail. They reached women in more than two-thirds of U.S. states and several territories. Originally focused on states with abortion restrictions, these efforts are expanding into states where abortion access faces few, if any, impediments.
and abortion networks are profiting. Five major pro-abortion networks are publicly listing their services. The pills, often manufactured overseas, are mailed in discreet packaging. To avoid detection, recipients can request unmarked pills.
Here outside the Department of Health and Human Services, the federal agency that oversees drug policy, the abortion pill has become a flashpoint in the national debate over life and public health. Earlier this year, pro-life advocates gathered here to protest federal policy expanding access to abortion drugs. They were arrested after refusing to leave the area, saying they were standing up for the lives of the unborn and calling for greater protections for women.
The abortion pill, which kills the majority of children being killed by abortion, is through that pill. We had to be there to be a witness and to get the abolishment of this evil law, this evil pill.
The Catholic Church teaches that every human life is sacred, from conception to natural death. Because abortion intentionally ends the life of an unborn child, it is considered a grave moral wrong.
The primary objective must remain the protection of every unborn child and the effective and concrete support of every woman so that she is able to welcome life.
Pro-life medical experts also warn that mailing abortion drugs removes critical medical oversight. Without in-person screening, conditions like ectopic pregnancies can go undetected, posing serious risks. The Ethics and Public Policy Center recently reviewed tens of thousands of insurance claims from women. It found that more than 10% of women who used mifepristone experienced a serious adverse event, such as sepsis, infection, or hemorrhaging, within 45 days.
The number one cause of death in the first trimester for women, ectopic pregnancies. So when you think of about 1 in 50 women in our country have ectopic pregnancies and taking the abortion drug without it. So APLOG supports any policy that the Trump administration would put forward that protects the lives of both our patients. And particularly if women are going to choose to have an abortion, they need to be safe.
The expansion of mail-ordered abortion has also raised legal questions. Some states restrict the distribution of abortion drugs, while federal policy has increasingly allowed telehealth prescriptions and mail delivery.
The most urgent need of the pro-life movement today, and that is to address the horror of the abortion drugs that are flooding into pro-life states and every state all over the country, leading to an increase in the number of abortions since the Dobbs decision.
In response, Catholic and pro-life organizations are expanding support services, offering counseling, medical referrals, and material assistance to women facing difficult pregnancies.
We go through whatever it is, say she wants to parent, then we talk about what that would look like and how we can help her through that process with our material resources. And then I talk about the parenting classes that we also offer. And yeah, different ways that we can help, financially and emotionally, any way that we can help, we try to help.
As access to the abortion pill continues to grow, the debate is intensifying, raising questions not only about safety and policy, but about how society continues to protect both women and unborn lives. Students at the University of Notre Dame recently gathered in prayer to give thanksgiving after a pro-abortion professor withdrew from her appointment to head the school's Asian Studies program. The on-campus rally late last week also featured prayers for the school's Catholic identity. The gathering was originally organized to protest the appointment of Susan Osterman, who has publicly criticized pro-lifers and crisis pregnancy centers. The day before the rally, she withdrew from the leadership position. Still, around 150 students and others from the community gathered to pray the rosary. One student says he is grateful the pro-abortion professor will not be taking such a prominent appointment, but that he wishes the university had done more to protect its Catholic identity. And that student joins us now. Luke Woodyard is a sophomore from Evansville, Indiana, majoring in theology and economics. Luke, thank you for joining us. To start, can you describe the reaction on campus when you learned the pro-abortion professor withdrew from leading Notre Dame's Asian Studies program?
Well, I mean, it was kind of like a confusing thing. I was in the gym in the basement of Alumni Hall. It was leg day, so I wasn't happy. But I got a text from my friend saying that Osterman had withdrawn. And I mean, I've been planning this protest for the last 2 weeks. I mean, it had been the only thing on my mind. And the first thing I thought is, wow, like, we won. But it was kind of bittersweet. I was extremely sad that morning because I felt like all this push was for the administration to take up their role. All this push was for Father Bob to come out and say, Bishop Rhodes is right, and we need to take this more accountable. We need to be the Catholic school that goes out into the world and evangelizes others. And it's impossible to do that when your home is, like, it's not built on solid ground, and the foundation is shaky. There's, like, a big rift at Notre Dame, and it's been there for a minute, and we need to start addressing it.
Now, how aware was everyone on campus about this controversy?
This controversy was huge. I mean, this was all over legacy media, Catholic media. I mean, and I was making an uproar. We had posters all over the campus talking about the protest. We had been hyping it up, Right to Life. I helped pin a letter to the president. I mean, the bishop's letter, that was like everyone knew about that, especially because it was so strong. And Bishop Rhodes is so blessed for helping us and standing strong with Notre Dame through this.
Now, why did you still decide to hold your event that Friday? Can you walk us through that, your thinking process there?
Yeah, the reason we had the event Friday is because although this was a big win, a big part of her resigning, I don't know this for a solid fact. This is me making an assumption. But that assumption is probably true because this is not the way Notre Dame typically does things. They were trying to kill the protest. I don't know about kill, but they were at least trying to butter it. They were trying to kind of quash it and reduce the amount of people that would be showing up. And in a large sense, I actually think that's correct, because, and it did work, because I was predicting thousands of people to be there, just from the amount of community support, people that were going to drive down that day. And then once Osterman withdrew, it did kind of throw that into the question, because what now? Like, what are the next steps in this? It made it unclear. She's gone. We won. But it's kind of a half victory because in the end she withdrew and there was no university action taking accountability for this. They simply pushed it off to her. And she took this in and she was like, I just want Notre Dame to be a place for academic freedom, so I'm just going to step down. I don't like all the drama. That's not what we needed. What we needed was an affirmative action that said Notre Dame in its hiring process will no longer take this. We will no longer spread this false culture of death through professors that just don't hold Notre Dame's values. I mean, our mission statement says we need to be a predominantly Catholic school. They don't even release the statistics anymore about how Catholic our professors are. And, like, what does Catholic even mean? Like, are they going to Mass weekly? Are they practicing? Or do they just, like, check the box so that they can work there? I mean, this is a ridiculous standard.
Luke, what are you hoping comes out of this controversy, especially in relation to Notre Dame's Catholic identity?
Yeah. I think this is just a big taking stock moment. I think this is a big, wow, this is crazy. Every president has had something like this. Every single time a new president comes in, there's a defining moment that determines the course of their presidency. And there are people that have been whispering to Father Dowd, this is going to ruin your presidency. If you act here, the shock is going to run through the media and it's going to be a fire fest. It's going to be Notre Dame dragging them through the mud. And it's going to be such a shadow hanging over Notre Dame for the rest of your presidency. And I really sympathize with that because I know Father Dowd is pro-life. He helped organize the prayer service and he helped lead in prayer directly before our March for Life. He helped send us off. Like, Father Dowd is avowedly pro-life and I love him for that. But pro-life means more than just like showing up to the prayer service. And it means more than just having pro-life rhetoric. It means word and deed. And Father Dowd's job is to ensure that everyone at Notre Dame is working towards and is conducive to students growing in faith and being led to Christ. And so what does that mean? That's making sure that all your hires, all your administration, you don't just divvy out that job to secular people that do not like follow Catholic teaching. You need to make sure that every single action is in line with that.
Well, Luke, thank you so much for coming on and sharing the student perspective.
Yeah, thank you.
Medical professionals from across the country recently gathered in Seattle for an annual conference hosted by the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, or APLOG. The conference addressed topics related to life-affirming and pro-family medical practice. Speakers included Princeton University's Robert P. George and David B. Wright, founder of 40 Days for Life. In an effort to encourage the next generation of pro-life medical professionals, the conference included medical students and recent med school graduates. Dr. Christina Francis, CEO of APLOG, says the youngest attendees expressed their gratitude for the event.
So many pro-life students feel very isolated in medical training programs. And so, you know, they said it was just so nice to know that not only are there other students and residents out there that are pro-life, but being able to interact with the practicing physicians and the practicing midwives and know that that we are out there as well.
Dr. Francis shared that the most meaningful part of the conference for her was to have all the medical professionals join in recommitting themselves to practicing the Hippocratic Oath.
And so we recited that oath together, many of whom came up to me afterwards and said that when they went to medical school, they actually never took that oath because so many medical schools are forsaking that oath now. And so for many of them, that was actually their first time reciting the Hippocratic Oath and recommitting to practicing according to those principles. And so I'm just really excited about what's going to come out of this conference. I think people were energized, they were encouraged, they were emboldened.
Coming up.
It takes real men to build a culture where all are protected. I'm Alan Holdren here in Des Moines, Iowa, where more than 1,000 men have come together through a Catholic apostolate called Forge to build a true culture of life.
Welcome back to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. A key component in creating a culture of life is raising up healthy families. A recent gathering of more than 1,100 men in the American Midwest focused on forging strong men to help build stable families. EWTN News contributor Alan Holdren has more.
In Des Moines, Iowa, more than 1,100 men meet, iron on iron, sharpening each other, building a culture of life, one man and one family at a time. A Catholic ministry called Forge has brought them together.
What we do in Forge is we try and, I guess you could say, kind of flip Satan's strategy on its head. So if Satan's strategy is to take down the church by taking down the family, by taking down men, then what we want to do is we want to build up men to build up marriages and families and then the church and the culture.
And you can be a man again, but you have got to stop talking and start acting. And
Dr. John Bishop saw a need to bring men together to support them in their role as fathers of families.
If you help out the man, that is, if you press on that leveraged point, then you not only help out him, but you help out his marriage, you help out his children. You don't only help them when it comes to their religious participation, you also help them when it comes to every other domain of their life, from education to job success to their ability to form positive relationships. So if we want to build good kids, right, if we want to build good families, right, families that can welcome those children in and build a culture of life, then I think the move today is to counter the crisis of men and masculinity and to build up men.
I'm thankful for this. You know, I can do all things.
Kansas City Chiefs football player Harrison Butker has drawn widespread praise, but also widespread criticism for being a vocal supporter of traditional roles in the family. He called on the men present to stand up and take on their God-given role as leaders.
Well, you kind of have to, as a man, get away from the Simpsons, hanging out on the couch, drinking the beer. Not that I'm, you know, doing all that, but I think we have, as men, an inclination ever since the fall to kind of be lazy, to be slothful, to let the woman lead. And I think that's something that's so prevalent in our society, and it's not easy for the man to say, you know what, I know this is countercultural, but I'm going to be the leader here.
Forge forms and educates. They say by seeking to bring a diverse and well-rounded set of minds to bear on difficult problems. Reclaiming the identity of men as sons of God is one of those problems. Psychologist Dr. Matt Bruninger says a healthy understanding of that relationship leads to healthy relationships in life.
So I think this is so crucial and fundamental to allowing people to have the interior freedom to live into the culture of life, to promote the culture of life. That takes an interior freedom. It takes healing. Otherwise, I'm living in mistrust, suspicion, and protection. And that's the culture of death. That turns me into in upon myself. When I'm healed, when I'm free, I can go out to the other. And that seems really important to me for a culture of life.
Simply growing up with the expectation to lead a family is also part of what Forage is advocating for. Adulting is what Gen Z calls it. The problem is that so many young adults are avoiding it. One Forage conference speaker, Paul J. Kim, travels the world encouraging men to face adulting head on.
I think in our day and age, especially in the age of AI and all the things, it's like there's this temptation to think that life is like A, B, C, when in fact it's kind of convoluted. And it can be very discouraging, right? Whether it's faith, finances, all the things, and my vocation in life, how do I make a gift of myself? And so I was in there giving them encouragement, reminding them that the ultimate call of their lives, regardless of what they do, is the call to be who they are, which is namely a son of God, to practice virtue in imitation of Christ like the saints did so well.
Another focus of Forage is education, forming men for faith-filled lives. Augustine Institute professor Dr. Edward Sree encouraged men to aspire after virtue in the footsteps of Mary.
She still had to trust the Father. She still had to walk by faith and not by sight. She faced moments of darkness, moments of trial, moments of great sorrow. And how did she respond? This inspires all Christian disciples, inspiring most men probably don't live the level of heroic virtue that Mary lived and can inspire all of us as men.
There's a hunger for formation and for camaraderie. Throughout this day-long conference, men are being invited to reflect on their important influence in their families and in society.
Just different tips and techniques for, you know, becoming a better and more holy Catholic man.
I've really surrounded myself with good and faithful men. My dad's really great, all my friends really great, but it's still really nice to get a perspective from so many people that have so many different experiences in life.
Just got married and we're expecting our first, so there's like this new urgency or new zeal. We're like, man, I want to like be a virtuous father. I want to be like a virtuous husband. I want to like follow Jesus. And yeah, God and my family do the same.
To see this many men focused on Christ is wonderful.
Apostolates like Forage are seeking to form what they call authentically masculine men for our times, who sharpen each other, living out the faith and fortifying their families. And in doing so, building a culture of life. In Des Moines, Iowa, Alan Holdren, EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
To explore more of these themes, check out Dr. John Bishop's just-released book, New Adam, God's Plan for Men. It is available from our Sunday Visitor Press. Finally, tonight, the battle for the unborn continues at the state level. This week, we take you to Arizona. The rally in downtown Phoenix included a march around the state capitol. The day began with several pre-rally events, including the option to buy roses for life. The proceeds go to a child welfare agency and pregnancy resource centers in Arizona. Speakers included Bishop Thomas J. Olmsted, Bishop Emeritus of the Diocese of Phoenix. McKenna Faith, a top seven finalist on American Idol, held a special performance and shared her personal journey with her adopted parents. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTNnews.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.